Extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
Welcome, everybody, to Extra Time. David Goss here with Matt Doyle, and it is a midweek Extra Time, which means it's a C2 edition. We've got Kalen Carr in the building, K2 on Mondays, which I realize is a mountain.
Yes.
So that's like a cool nickname for Kalen Kyle.
We'll let her decide if she thinks that's cool. Right.
Well, I established it here while she wasn't here, so it's canon now.
Okay,
so if she goes against it, that's against history, culture, and heritage. But we've got the other Kalen, as he was mentioned on Monday. But on this show is not the other Kalen. He's the only Kalen. Kalen Carr in the house. How you doing?
Good to see you guys. How's everything? Good.
How was the Monday episode you're listening? Did you enjoy?
I did, yeah. I'm starting to get a little bit more used to not responding every time someone says Kalen.
Even though you got mentioned a bunch at the beginning of the show?
Yeah, that makes it even more confusing. It's just, you got to stop that. Don't
your
mention
agent
me.
Did well, worked it into your contract that you get airtime on MLS, even when you're not on the
show. Weeby even mentioned me on Instant Replay this week.
Who? Who's?
Yeah, so Andrew Weeby, he's
the old host of the show.
He's been loaned out to MLS Next Pro for a little bit.
Yeah, he needs reps.
He needs minutes.
Yeah.
But like, the club's completely behind him, and we think that he has a really bright future.
We were listening to offers.
Yeah. But so he's gone, but I'm glad to hear that he remembered who
you
were.
You don't want to be mentioned on Instant Replay. Like, as a general rule, like, don't tag me in any tweets. Don't put, if you see something, don't say something to me.
Because so Instant Replay gets a lot of interaction with fans if you tag them in a tweet. And that's like, that's kind of your wheelhouse.
I mean, that's my greatest fear, honestly. It's just especially angry fans about calls, but he sided with me, and this New England Cincinnati match, it did have some calls, not always the best ones, in my opinion.
So if you don't like to talk to angry fans, you've stepped into the lines then, because obviously Knicks in five right now. That's what this show is.
Oh boy.
And in the group chat, you sent a screenshot of a 2012 Facebook post by you with the greatest flopper in NBA history, Reggie Miller.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's unfair.
Thought I was going to let that go?
That's unfair.
You didn't bring Alonzo Mourning and Tim Hardaway or Michael Jordan into this house. You brought Reggie Miller into this house?
In New York. In your own
house?
In the garden.
In this climate?
That's
in
right.
this economy?
You know what? The funny thing is the Reggie Miller story. So I was a huge Reggie fan growing up. Sorry.
Yeah, disgusting.
Yeah, so I remember that post was, you know, in honor of the legend, Reggie. I posted on MLS Cup Day, which was...
Reggie had how many titles? How many championships did he win? Cool.
Good point. The Knicks? What's up? Is this a Knicks fan?
More as a franchise.
He's feeling himself. Like his team outplayed Gabe Vincent last night. Okay. So, like, they're ready to hang a banner.
So, I actually...
Paul Reed sitting in the middle here?
I met even his name. John Starks here in New York on a trip. I went to it was a luncheon for the fire department, which was really cool.
And because you are a Chicago Fire legend, you automatically
The funny part is I went with Jeff Curtin, a former fire player with me, Jim's brother. They both played together in Chicago. And anyway, so he invited me with him to go to this and we had a great time. But at our table was John Starks. And Jeff tells Starks that I'm a huge Reggie Miller fan at the table. And Starks legitimately was pissed. Like, he was angry. He gave me, like, the cold shoulder the entire rest of the lunch. And I kind of respected him more for it, honestly. I was like, wow, this is, like, 20 years later. And then I saw Starks at the Garden last night just
whooping it up on Jalen Brunson.
But I'm going to tie this all back together. So the thing is, though, you posted the Reggie Miller picture on, it was before we had memes, picture on your Facebook without commentary on the day of MLS Cup, and then you follow that up by going out scoring an MLS Cup.
That's right. Yeah, I was on one. I was it was also the picture of him shoving Michael Jordan too, which all Knicks, we could agree on that. We could agree on our hate.
I hate the Pacers more than I hate the Bulls.
Dude. Oh, stop it.
Mm-hmm.
That's so soft.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah.
Like Reggie Miller flopping? That soft? Yeah? Like Dale Davis and Anthony Davis being soft in the front? I just want to say, you mentioned John Starks respecting him. I respect Jeff Curtin for making sure John Starks knew that there was a fox in the hen house there. And that brings us to Jim Curtin, who has had not the best week. And we are going to move into soccer now. You were giving me a look like you can't believe I'm moving on.
I'm fine. Okay. Go ahead. I would like to talk soccer.
All right. So CONCACAF Champions League semifinal closed on the MLS side. We're still waiting to see who will get through on the Liga MX side. It's not supposed to be set up that way, but it is set up that way. León hosting Tigres coming up later tonight. LAFC. Congratulations, you are going to your second ever CCL final. I kind of forgot about that in the malaise that was. COVID and everything, they went to the bubble CCL final down in Orlando. But this one will be two legs. They will get a home game, and this is big, and it's historic. So LAFC winning 3-0 last night. That gives them a 4-1 win overall across the two legs. It was an eventful match. Very quickly, I think we talked for a little while on Monday about what Alejandro Bedoya will bring because he missed MLS Cup. He was not super committed to this game either. He attempted to get a red card 2 minutes into the game. He gets fortunate, I think, doesn't get a red card there. Timothy Tillman scores off a corner kick in the 13th minute. Andre Blake makes a save on the initial header.
Ridiculous save.
Maybe the best save in an MLS goalkeeper's history, but leads to a goal, so no one will remember.
Stefan Fry, I think, is probably... got that.
Yeah, it's still Steph Fry.
Yeah. But
because he won.
Yeah, that'd be fair. Because it didn't immediately turn into a goal.
Right. Yeah. So Tillman puts that in. Now, at the time, that doesn't really change things for Philly. Philly, with the away goals, still had to score no matter what. Yeah. So it kind of is one of those weird moments where it's a gut punch, but Philly's still kind of okay. They create some chances in the first half. Gazdag, the two best looks, won from a really tight angle at the near post, and then one from the top of the 18 that he pulls just wide. And then coming out of halftime, Olivier Mbaizo picks up a second yellow card in the 59th minute for a red card. I don't even understand the tackle from Mbaizo.
Yeah, I thought LAFC did a nice job of getting Bwanga out into the open field, and Bwanga's got the type of speed and ability on the ball to turn what's even a bad angle, to turn that in, even something like that, into a clear chance. And so I think Mbaizo just had a moment where he's like, I got to take the foul here, without remembering that he had taken one of the dumber yellow cards any of us has ever seen in the first half. It was for the shove. Yeah. When he held back.
The foul.
Yes, he got it. Like, he was in, I don't want to say the open field, but he was, you know, making a progressive run with the ball, and Murillo dragged him down, essentially. And Mbaizo, who had been clearly been frustrated to that point, just like pushes Murillo to the ground. Like, it was a flop from Murillo. It was a Reggie Miller type of thing from Murillo. But it was like completely deserved yellow card. Completely deserved yellow card for Mbaizo on the first one, and then a completely deserved yellow card on the second one. And at that point, it became academic. At that point, 3-0 became much more likely than 1-1 or any Union favorable scoreline.
So two things out of that. One, Jim Curtin has spent a decent amount of time over the last few months talking about how he thought Mbaizo against Bwanga in MLS Cup
was
the best performance anyone's ever put in against Bwanga, which maybe had hyped him up too much.
Yeah.
The other is Murillo picked up a yellow card on that play as well. He gets subbed off at halftime.
Murillo deserved two yellow cards on that play. Yeah. It should be known. Like, he committed a yellow card worthy foul at the start of the play.
All the way up in the
attacking third. And then Philly play out of it. And then Mbaizo ends up with the ball driving forward, like literally through midfield. He had come in so far. And Murillo just drags him down, which is a second yellow, like, we might have to turn it over to Kalen, who's the instant replay expert and like loves weighing in and all that. It was like, it was a very professional, like, he got two for the price of one for his yellows.
And he gets subbed off, and that was a big moment because Maldonado hasn't been around that much. Long hasn't been around that much. But it ends up being, and Mbaizo gets the red card. That pretty much takes away a ton of the pressure. Philly proceeded to knock it around the back for a while. That was weird. Glesnes just, they were trying to play through him. He kept playing back. And then LAFC were able to, you know, jump on them in one of the 10 opportunities they had.
Yeah.
Mahalo Opoku gets the first one. It's a thunderbolt at the far post, pass Andre Blake, and that pretty much sealed the deal. But as you said, once the red card happens, it quite honestly, out of the first goal, it never really felt like Philly had the belief that they were going to get back in it.
I don't know. Like, I find had the belief as it's just a weird way of putting it. Maybe it's the right way of putting it. To me, it's just like they didn't have the talent. Yeah. They didn't have the talent. Like, playing this game without Jose Martinez, we can't build through central midfield anymore. Like, Leon Flach's a good player at what he does, and what he does is tackle people, win the ball, and then hit sideway passes to, you know, push other people up into the attack. Having him as your number six means you're over, you know, with Jose Martinez injured, means that you're not going to be able to build that way. Okay, well, we can still play over the top. We have two DP forwards. Michael Ura right now is not a DP forward. He was the worst player on the field by a good distance, including on the opening goal where he completely misjudges the service, leaves Ilya all alone to force Andre Blake into that remarkable save. Obviously, a lot of stuff goes wrong on the back post as well, to leave Timothy Tillman open to tap it home. But it was a good ball.
Yeah.
It should have been cleared by Ura. Like that is his job in that spot, coming off the line, defending a corner kick, and he failed at that. He didn't do anything, and like, I don't think he won a header all night.
No, he did that thing where when the ball went over his head, he would turn and run at the defender who was heading it back over him.
Yeah,
because, you know, face guarding, that's really going to be big.
So it's just a talent thing.
Yeah,
right? It's a talent thing, and the Union were without their best player. And or most important player at the very least, you know, one of their two DP forwards didn't show up at all. Their DP number 10 got their two best looks and didn't do much with it, and didn't do anything in terms of creating looks mm-hmm. for Carranza and Ura the few times he was able to get on the ball. And then Kai Wagner is not the same player he was last year. And so much of what they did last year went through Kai Wagner. And, you know, yeah, so they didn't have the belief. I think it's the LAFC is a better team. They're the more better put together, more talented team.
Yeah, I've been in that situation where you're probably not the better team, so you almost have to play a perfect match.
What you do is you post a picture of Reggie Miller on your Facebook that morning.
And you go to the Holiday Inn Continental Breakfast Buffet
in
and then
Torrance.
You hit the field.
And then you play the first half and then...
True.
Get out of there.
You leave as a winner.
Yeah. But I felt like, I mean, we saw this in MLS Cup last year too, where talking about missing important players, Bedoya, you think would maybe make a big difference in a match like that. Martinez would probably be the other one, both for what they do on the field. And then also I think for the personality of like playing in essentially a final, mm-hmm. semifinal in this case. But I think that second, the Acosta goal, like in the first leg,
right. To not have gotten the lead, not to have left with the lead.
Yeah.
That they deserved and should have been bigger.
If you open that door and then it shuts.
Yeah.
That was always going to be tough. And then Martinez being out, that starts to go down. It is disappointing. As you mentioned, Ilya, like set pieces, again, a problem where you think that this team in a final, or in this you know,
a knockout leg. Game
yeah knockout right. Like you have to get set pieces right. You would also hope that you would have to have like a ridiculous save from Blake to be able to like withstand this, and then you get the rebound. So that part is frustrating. I think you start going further down into depth, and I think that was also mm-hmm. where you're able to bring a Gareth Bale off the bench. And again, this time they bring in Opoku and they bring in Cifuentes. Like it's just sure. ridiculous that they're able to continue to do that. So I think more and more as you look and you mentioned it too on the depth side for Philly, as it kind of like, as you go down one step, you go down one step further. That's the hard part. And I actually thought when you think towards the CCL final, I thought that having, you know, that loss that they had for LAFC, I always thought, if they had Bradley Wright Phillips
oh yeah
during that run, because he yeah. remember he, during that offseason he moved to Columbus, I think.
Because that CCL was after the MLS season had ended
and
because
BWP
of COVID.
In that season, in that 2020 season, he was scoring like a goal every 85 minutes he was on the field. And there's a play late in that game because LAFC had a 1-0 lead, scored an incredible goal. And then Tigres come back. They're winning 2-1 late. And there's a play where I want to say it was Diego Rossi gets to the end line, beats his man, and hits pull back across the box. And Kwadwo Opoku, who's a very good player, but is not an instinctive, polished goal scorer in the way BWP was, he's just standing there 8 yards out. It's like, no, that's the near post run. And I still have a tweet out there somewhere that's like, if they had just signed Bradley Wright Phillips,
just do it.
They win that game.
Yeah.
They win that game.
And maybe that everything changes, right? And that's how small the margins are. And that's what we're talking about with Philly is just like those tiny little margins of signing this player or not. And I think Corey Burke came on and did an amazing job last year, right? Gave them a chance. They still fell short, but completely changed the game. And not having him, I saw you.
Oh, I'm going to have more to say about on that.
Yeah, so I mean, I think like the further down, you start missing some of those pieces.
People wanted to know why they're not using Joaquin Torres and Andres Perea.
And like, Chris Donovan.
Like, did you watch those guys play last year? Like, Wilfred Nancy, Wilfred Nancy and Jim Curtin are like the two best developers in talent in MLS.
Wilfred Nancy made Alex Matan a legitimate
player. Yeah, and they were both like, Joaquin Torres, I can't do much with this guy.
Yeah, well, compare that to Cifuentes. I mean, ridiculous.
Cifuentes was a best 11 player according to us.
The way he came into the match, though, too. He gets the one where he's like holding off a guy, I think, and then ends up, Stu rightly pointed out, where he kind of opens up that space. He continues his run, draws the attention of Glesnes, drags to Mahala over there, who's wide. I mean, ridiculous finish from him, too.
Yeah.
I mean, just smacked that thing. But then even on the ball through to Boanga late, I think that was Cifuentes as well. So just to have that kind of depth coming off the bench. And now I think with Mahalo Opoku, I think it's kind of that BWP type figure of like might not be starting every game, although he, has the quality to. But in a final, and we'll get to that, I'm sure. But I feel like he could make a big difference. And for me in MLS Cup, his role in that was like, overshadowed in a lot of ways of saying how important he was towards them getting that, as opposed to, I know, Bale gets the dunk and all that. But I think that play begins with, I can't remember if it was one, but it's what the play chases down towards the end line and keeps the ball in bounds. And he just does all the little things right. And he's now finishing as well.
Yeah, LAFC was able to start Bogus in this one. So they didn't even have to start Stipe Buick. Like, who's the guy who's supposed to start? And then Opoku comes off the bench as well. Tillman starts over Cifuentes.
I mean, Torrington deserves incredible amount of respect and praise for the way
that's
he's
why I picked
this.
Him on my team. I had him and Jim on my squad.
Yeah.
So you're a CCL golden boy at this point. You mentioned for LAFC, we've got time to talk about them. The final doesn't come up for another month. All of the Liga MX playoffs are going to end, and then after it finishes, then we will get the final. I believe right now, if I'm correct, it's scheduled for a midweek and a weekend final.
I believe
all the same week. I have shockingly seen CONCACAF change things late on, especially in this competition. So we will see what those dates look like when we get there. But for LAFC, an opportunity to do something historic, to do something massive. We talked about it a lot on Monday. It would be the greatest run for an MLS club in history. It would sort of set this group for this year, 18-month span, in a spot, no matter what they do the rest of the year, in a spot that no other MLS team has ever held. We're going to talk about LAFC a lot coming up the next few weeks. I know LAFC fans are like super stoked about me right now. They're really having fun. So all of us are in this together. But let's look at Philly here long term. What this means, because we built it up on Monday. What this means for LAFC, what it would mean for Philly. They've had issues in knockouts, as Kalen has said. He brought up MLS Cup. You bring up Eastern Conference Finals. A lot of open cups as well. And I think to me, when I sort of said the belief type thing, I felt like last year at MLS Cup, even without Bedoya, even with goals against them, there was like we have something special in this group that we can continue to push. And it feels like some of that has gone away. And now we're looking sort of at the end, maybe, of this project. Tom Bogert, Tommy Scoops, putting out a few weeks ago that Jim Curtin's contract's up at the end of the year. He has not been extended. We know Kai Wagner's contract's up at the end of the year. Alejandro Bedoya is 36 years old. Jack McGlynn's the next to be sold. Nathan Harrio right behind him. Like, was this the door closing for Philly?
I don't think it's the door closing. I would be 0% shocked if Philly went and won the Open Cup. I would be 0% shocked if they won the League's Cup. I'd be a little surprised if they won MLS Cup this year, unless there are midseason changes coming.
There has never been an MLS Cup finalist who went to a semifinal of a CCL, and CCL finalists basically have no
history of success. The closest team to that was 2021 Philly, wasn't it? Because they went to CCL semifinals.
And then they went to the Eastern Conference
and finals. They would have won if they hadn't been health and safety protocoled out of their entire team.
Yeah, they finished fifth overall in MLS, but second in the East that year.
And they were the best team in the league down the stretch.
Yeah.
Now NYCFC fans are going to be all over us.
Montreal 2015 did well, but Drogba joined in August that year, which helped a little bit. And then 2011 RSL, they were Western Conference finalists, but different format.
Philly could have used Drogba last night.
I
was tweeting about it and you referenced it. MLS Cup, 65 minutes. Yeah, I guess Philly had belief. They weren't getting, their brains beat out by LAFC, but LAFC was the better team through 65 minutes. And then Corey Burke came out. Like, I remember doing the post game show with you because Corey Burke, like the way you phrased it was Corey Burke was like, barbecue chicken, mouse in the house, get it to me. And like that started changing the way Philly could play because like it's hard to play through LAFC. They might be the best team on the continent right now and maybe were last year as well. But if you have a dominant center forward, you can play over them. And Corey Burke was dominating that game and allowing Philadelphia to play Route 1 football. And, Carranza was winning second balls and Gazdag was winning second balls. And, everybody, Flock was winning a million second balls, McGlynn even. And, like, that changed the game. And for the final 50, 55 minutes of that one, the Union were a better team. It was only, the LAFC had Gareth Bale to bring off the bench, man. Like, so by not bringing Corey Burke back and not replacing him in any meaningful, I just thought it was an unserious offseason from the Union front office. I thought it was like you only get so many chances to win something like this. You're only going to get this close so many times. You do not hire a coach like Joe Mazzulla. Oh, sorry. Wait, wrong thing. You do not let your...
I don't even know who that is.
I knew that was coming.
That's the Celtics head coach.
Okay, sorry.
I am just livid. Let your game-changing super sub walk away. And like the question was posed, I think Tannenwald posed it to me. It's like, would you have paid him what the Red Bulls offered him? And like, yes, you absolutely. Right. You keep, like, if you're keeping this team together for one last run, which is clearly the case, then you keep the team together, including that key piece. And if you can't keep it together with him, then you go out and you say, all right, I know our identity is, finding distressed assets and developing young players. We can do that and still be the team that goes out and looks for that final attacking piece that put us over the top. They almost had it last year. Like that was, I'll remember that game for the rest of my life. They had no way to change the game. I don't want to say everything, but like the way that happened in the aftermath of MLS Cup in which they came so close and the Shield in which they came so close, it did not feel to me like the decisions being made were decisions with winning.
Yep. Sometimes you need to think short term to get over the line because you're not always going to be close. And sometimes you have to make the wrong long-term decision, but the right short-term decision to win something. And then you fix it later.
Yeah.
Right?
And by the way, if they had signed Corey Burke for whatever the Red Bulls get, you could trade him for $300,000 in GAM in the middle of the season if you need to. Like, this is not like there's no shortage of team. Like, Adrian Heath would give his left arm for Corey Burke.
Or you could have gone out and gotten Kai Kamara or Giassi Zardes.
Exactly.
Or you could have gone out and said, yeah, we're not going to bring Corey Burke back because we don't think that's the right move. But like, we're going to fill this role. And that's the part with Philly that feels a little bit tough is they've been up against this line of like, we're almost there. And there are ways to get over that line. We saw what Atlanta did in 2018. They went out and got like Darlington Nagby.
And we saw what the Red Bulls didn't do.
Yes.
Right? The Red Bulls never made that big move to get... To get Bradley Wright Phillips some goal scoring help, because BWP is one of the, you know, 5 or 10 best number nines in MLS history. He never had a secondary goal scorer on that team in the way that, like, Atlanta had Joseph Martinez, Miguel Almiron, and Tito Villalba. Who won MLS Cup? The team that you have to pay for goals, man.
And
for
Seattle,
for what it's worth, I don't think Kai would have gone to Philly.
Yeah.
I don't see that.
Not the style. Not the
system. Think it was what he was looking for.
Okay, that's fair. Although it would have given him a chance to win something, and we'll talk about Kai coming up a little bit more in a minute. But this Philly team now, like, where do you go from here this season?
I'm actually not down on Philly at all. In this case, I understand. I mean, the biggest concern for me is Jim Curtin. If they're gonna, that's the one contract that scares me the most if I'm a Philly supporter, to be like, hey, what's going on?
If you're Jim Curtin and you haven't been extended at a really big number by now,
yeah,
aren't you just okay? I'll wait and see what Chicago or Atlanta have to offer me this offer.
Or whoever, yeah, I mean,
or the LA Galaxy,
yeah, or abroad. I mean, I think he will. I think he's in a good position. I think it's kind of surprising to me that they haven't tried to break the bank to keep him, because
two-time coach of the year.
I just keep seeing. I mean, you just like look up to Montreal. You see what happens. You lose an important manager. I think with all of the turnover that you have in MLS now, and that's just a bigger part of things. So we're going to get to like Cincinnati. We're going to talk to other places about other clubs. The turnover is the hardest part now to do, which is why when we all went through this draft last week, it was pick the sporting director, then the manager, than the player,
right?
Which, you know me, that's hard for me to do. I want to pick the player first. But I think that's just the reality.
If Kwa was available,
there's always exceptions. Yeah. But I think that's just indicative of the way the league is now and how much you have to continue to rebuild and do that. And I think Philly have done a really good job of that to this point. It's tough because they have been so close. You mentioned the COVID one. That's still the one that sticks out in my mind of when they lost 10 players and still gave New York City a game.
Yeah.
That one still sticks out to me. And then the final against LAFC is like a dream. Like when I talked about playing, you have to play a perfect match. Like they played the perfect match and still lost.
Yeah.
That's just unlucky, and a credit to LAFC. So, you know, in this one, yeah, I think this one down a notch, not as good, maybe as strong or as deep as they were. But I still feel good about this team this season, at least, because if you look in the Eastern Conference, Cincinnati losing Brenner. I don't know what's going to go on with Vasquez. We'll get to them in a bit. New England just lost Barrero. Like, these are the two top teams in the East. New York City, I think they had 0.34 expected goals.
They could use Corey Burke.
Yeah, they could use a striker. So, you know, I think they will add. So they could potentially jump up as things go on. Nashville's in around it, but we'll talk about them. So there's a lot of, like, the East to me is pretty open, and that's when I come back to Philly and I'm like, oh, Philadelphia.
Yeah, they're going to be fine, but like, and like I said, if they won Open Cup or they won League.
Just to be clear, we don't know that, because when we talk about this from a team point of view, they're going to be fine. But historically, teams that go deep in CCL are not fine, and it's not always logical.
You're right. I trust that they... I mean, they have the core from 2 years ago that went exactly this far in CCL and then turned around and played great soccer in the second half of that season and, you know, almost beat NYCFC with, you know, Bethlehem Steel. So, like, I think that Philadelphia's, but like.
And they haven't tanked so far. They're like 9th or 10th right now on the table.
Like, yeah. But like, it feels like, it does not feel like, okay, this is a team that we can project out 70 points is within the realm of possibility. Like it does, for the reasons that David said, Kai Wagner being out of contract after the year, Alejandro Bedoya being, you know, 36. It feels like, unless there's a little more ambition suddenly in their signings.
Yeah. Just for Philly fans, we have seen that once. 2020, they won Supporters Shield. Sergio Santos, starting center forward. Jamiro Montero, the 10. They signed Gazdag. They signed Ura. Both were DPs at a higher number than what they had paid before. And obviously, they did good work to bring in Carranza. So that was an upgrade from their past spending habits.
How many of those players you listed would start on this LAFC team?
I think Gazdag would start over Timothy Tillman.
Did you know that...
Doyle's doing research while trying to...
I am. The Union have not used any of their U22 initiative slots.
Why would they?
Why?
You're like, playing academy players.
What's that?
You're playing academy players. Those are your young guys.
You could go out and get a Stipe Buick.
Guess what? LAFC doesn't play an academy player. Right? I don't think that doesn't bother me, really.
Wow.
In that way, I would say, look at the number you got Mikel Ura on, and then look at the number Columbus is spending on their center forward, and look at the number that a TFC spends on their center forward and an NYCFC. That would be my concern, is not the amount of out of salary cap roster players they put on and the quality of the players.
But if we're talking about depth, it's both. But anyway. Yeah.
Okay. So two games this weekend for these teams coming up. LAFC, they travel to San Jose. This one's 7:30 p.m. Eastern time in San Jose.
I just want to make one more point. Like, I've been hard on Philadelphia in this. Like, I still think it's great that there's different ways to go about building a winning team. Like, what Ernst Tanner has done in his 4 years in charge, 5 years maybe, 2019?
I don't remember.
Yeah, it has been like, he's really, really good at it. And I don't think that... Like, this isn't an existential thing with the Union. Like, I'm convinced they're going to keep being good. I just think that at some point, look, the league gets better every freaking year. The types of players that we get, like Jose Cifuentes, as you said, he came off the bench.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with what you're saying. And when I was talking about having to remake teams and turn over teams quickly, like, the windows are so short now in MLS, which is why what LAFC is doing is even more impressive. And Seattle has the continuity, but a different style of roster build. But I think you're right. You have to be able to, you have to spend at a certain point. And especially if you're getting close, like, think about if you're that close already, if you just add a little bit more, could you then go over the top? So I think that is kind of the part where I definitely agree with you on that. If they were to go, and that's more where you're saying, okay, well, if you're Jim Curtin, at some point, are you going to be like, well, I kind of want to, you know, test my hand at a place that's going to really spend.
I'd like to, you know, coach a $40 million roster.
So talking about just getting over the edge, Philly sitting on that, they head to New York Red Bulls this weekend, 7:30 p.m. Eastern time. That one at Red Bull Arena, all games on MLS season pass. You can find that on Apple TV. Got you, Caitlin. I'm good. You're good. Red Bulls obviously were in this similar situation over the last 7 or 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
They did not make that move, as we talked about. That's not the situation they're in this year. They are 1-3-6 to start the year, Red Bulls. The last coach they let go midseason was Chris Armas. He was 3-4-2 to start that year. So one more game played, one more point right now for Gerhard Struber and that team.
Gerhard Struber quoted on Sirius XM back on February 20th. "We're all excited for the new season. For the last two seasons, we've developed in a very good way. This is a season for more, for big expectations."
Beating a team that just lost in a CCL final on the other side of the country on Tuesday night would be a decent start for them. This seems to be a decent matchup and moment for the Red Bulls, but they genuinely need to get their season going here and get their feet under them. So this is a big chance for them. LAFC, I was mentioning, they head to San Jose. This game's at Levi Stadium, expecting over 40,000. It is Mexican Heritage Day, and that one is a 4:30 p.m. local time kick, so 7:30 p.m. Eastern time. This is Bay Area stuff, Kalen. So do you have any travel recommendations for people? Levi Stadium, what? It's like in the middle of the water, right? It floats. Everyone swims out there.
I think I saw a national team game there. They play Colombia there?
Yeah, in the Copa America, I believe.
Yeah.
Copa Centenario.
Yeah. I remember that. I like these big stadiums. I got to play in Oakland Coliseum and the Giants Stadium with Chicago. And it was same reason, basically. I don't know if it was Cinco de Mayo, but we had Blanco, so it was like to, nice. You know, for the
everywhere you went was Mexican. Yeah, yeah.
By the way, people listening to this, Cinco de Mayo is not the Mexican 4th of July. It's not Mexican Independence Day. It's
the
it's,
only person who thinks that is the San Jose Earthquakes event staff or whatever.
But I feel like I am excited for this one because, I mean, both teams have attack, like, Espinosa's been amazing.
Yeah, I have him in my MVP rankings right now.
He's got to be. I think he's between him and Obobese, they have 11 goals, 4 assists between them. Mm-hmm. So that partnership has worked really well. I thought, especially on this last one, they kind of the way they look for each other, Espinosa's service and then Obobese's header was top notch. I thought it kind of hangs in the air. But yeah, I think, you know, so there's going to be goals on that side. And then, you know, LAFC as well, too. So I could see this one turning into, you know, how the way you used to watch like the Cali Clasicos and it was
Alan Gordon off the bench.
Yeah,
maybe.
It would just be like mayhem, Shea Salinas. Like,
no one leaves
late goals, all that.
Goals
like,
after the 90th.
Yeah, yeah, I think there might be something like that in this one.
It's going to be a fun one. So we're looking forward to that.
Where are you overall on the Quakes on this project this year?
I think they've had really high highs. I think I still have some question marks as far as like, well, Griezo has been really good because he gets behind them and allows the rest of the team to kind of move forward. They've needed a player like that for a
Jackson,
long
you'll
time.
Scored a goal this weekend because it's a nice Griezo goal. Covers everything
yeah.
else.
Yeah, but it allows, you know, that safety blanket. I do question a little bit. I mean, this will be a good test. I do question a little bit just like defensively if they can really like if it's an elite team.
Yeah. I don't 1v1.
Yeah, I worry a little bit about that. But attacking wise, they're like a really fun team to watch. But I would say, you know, it's still early in the Lucci project. And I'm interested to see what they do with the academy, if they add more. You know, if they can integrate some of this young talent that we've talked about that comes through the system. And then I think eventually probably making some more signings, especially around that back line area.
I will say as soon as Nico Sekiris gets healthy, he's going to be playing big minutes, like rotation minutes for the team.
I like that they made moves because you needed to upgrade the roster. They didn't make many and they hit on the ones they did. Capo has been really good. Mm-hmm. Mensah was the right move after the injury
Absolutely.
That they had to make. And Grueso has been phenomenal. But otherwise, that's kind of all they did.
Yeah.
In the offseason, you don't need to make 27 sometimes, and then it's chaos and no one knows their role at all. Let's talk about a team in the East who's also trying to show their commitment, I think. Ake Loba bought out about an hour after our show was recorded on Monday. So thank you, Nashville, for that. We always appreciate breaking news directly after we finish recording. Ake Loba is the club record signing for Nashville SC. The rumored number that he signed for was $6.8 million. For context, Hani Mukhtar, the number reported is $2.7 million. Nashville has spent over $1 million on 3 other players. That includes allocation money trade for Walker Zimmerman, Shaq Moore, and Rodrigo Pinheiro. So my understanding, if I'm okay at math, is that Ake Loba's transfer fee by himself equals every other player combined in Nashville SC history. He'll finish 40 appearances, 2 career MLS starts, 2 goals, and 2 assists. Do you guys want to start with what happened or what this means for Nashville?
I think the more interesting thing is what this means, because what happened is they signed a guy and he never won a starting job, even though DPs are given a red carpet straight into a starting job. He just did not deliver. Okay, it's great to see commitment from the ownership to get out of the last 6 months or 7 months of
not every team does that.
Not every team does that of a deal that has gone wrong. One has to assume that what comes next is another shot at bringing in a high level number 9, another $7 million player. The name we have thrown around on this show over the past couple of weeks is Adam Fuksa, who was really good for the Revs for a couple of years.
I forget that we've said that, and every time you bring it up, I don't know who you're going to say, and I keep thinking you're going to say Firmino, and then you say Buxa, and every time I go, oh yeah, that'd be a good sign.
Yeah, right? He's not had a good go of it in France, but he would certainly fit Gary Smith's game model. He's done it in MLS before. You have to do due diligence on that ankle because that's what's kept him off the field for Lens. But like that would make sense, but that's 2 months from now.
Would you say that Ake Loba has been a Koke level bad signing?
Yeah, I think it would be up there.
Sorry, my Dynamo teammate
What do you want me to do with that? What was I supposed to say?
I just wanted to see your reaction. No, but I think, you know, between this
Caleb,
move.
Can you just give people all the details so that they can go Google this story themselves?
Just Google Sergio Coque, yeah, Houston
yeah,
Dynamo.
Yeah, yeah. It's not doing great. with between the Ake Loba and CJ Sapong leaving, you had to, like, they're clearing way, yeah, right? Like, this space is open. So, I mean, the exciting, I think Buxa would be amazing for them. I think he'd actually be great for New England still if they could try to find a way to lure him back now with Barrero's injury.
Yeah.
Like, they still, for me, need some help somewhere for sure. Up top, I think, is probably the place to look. Because Barrero's just like a hard piece. And the thing I like about Buxa potentially coming back to the Revs as well, too, is we've seen players come back to a team and have short transitions as far as coming back.
Right.
James Sands, Santi Rodriguez, NYCFC, they just kind of like, it just clicks right back.
Revs don't have an open DP slot.
I don't, unless you want to sign Veroni from them, so then they can use it to sign Buxa. I don't know what the books look like for the C2s.
I haven't dug deep into I've spent a lot of time in Foxborough, but I haven't dug that deep.
But the point is with Nashville, this sets them up, right? If they go out and they use this DP slot well, this sets them up in theory from July onwards to be one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference, honestly.
They already are, right? They already are fourth in the East right now.
Yeah.
But, and I think that's where one of the reactions I got from some Nashville fans first was relief that they mm-hmm. had done this. And the second was, why is it happening 2 days after the transfer window closes?
Yes.
A week after?
I also had that question.
Which, and you gave away CJ Sapong, gave away, wrong term, but you got rid of CJ Sapong. That timing was odd, except I do think you have a Nashville team that is capable. Treading water is probably the wrong term, but continuing to be somewhat successful throughout the rest of the season. There are more players available in the summer because there are more leagues that have ended. There are more players on open contracts. It's not easy to get those players to hit quickly, or you look at some players who, by the time you would get to an MLS Cup, they'd be 18 months into a season because they had played a full year, and then you go into that. But that looks like what Nashville is going to do. And I think as a fan of this team, you have to be excited about this level of commitment that they tried to loan Ake Loba out. He got injured. They didn't have to make this move. So at this point, it'd be shocking if they didn't replace him. But they've also made like Yonder Cadiz level moves in the past, where it was like a DP, like you're a DP. Like Kalen's a true blue blood DP. You're like by title only, right? So it could be a move like that. And it'll be interesting to see for Nashville when they're able to get that done. Rodrigo Pinheiro, I mentioned here, like I said this to someone yesterday. Their hit rate on players coming from outside of Major League Soccer
very low,
almost zero.
Yeah.
And if you think Shaq Moore hasn't worked and Randall Leal hasn't lived up, then it may actually be zero, which is pretty scary. And so then you start to look at who's available in the league. And we talked about Raul Ruiz Diaz the other day a lot. And Doyle said, no chance.
So from what I have heard, there would be, I'm not going to say that there's zero chance that Seattle move him now, from what I've heard.
Okay. Is there any other?
But there's zero chance Gary Smith will want a 5'7" tall center forward. Okay. It just doesn't fit how they play.
Is there any other one in this league that you think would make sense that pops to mind? Or you assume
It's not germane. Honestly, it's not germane until the window opens because it's a transfer and trade window.
Mm-hmm.
So 2 months from now when it reopens, because I think it's mid-July.
It's July. I believe it's July 4th.
July 4th. So just like literally 2 months from tomorrow.
Yeah.
When you're listening to this, you're listening to this on May 4th, most likely. 2 months from now, maybe somebody pops loose. I don't know.
Yeah.
But
it's not an obvious one.
They have to go to work for the next 2 months with Teal Bunbury and Ethan Zubak. And like, maybe they can sign a free agent or something like that. But that's
Tom
all
Dwyer can come into training.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
They are playing against the Chicago Fire this weekend, 8:30 p.m. Eastern time at Geodis Park. Kai Kamara will be in that game. They did not trade for Kai Kamara earlier in the year. He has hit the ground running with the Chicago Fire, 4 goals already this season. He sits on 142 career MLS regular season goals. That is 2 goals behind Landon Donovan he sits on 143. So 2 goals behind, tying Landon at 145 for second all time in MLS goal scoring history. But Kalen, you don't want to talk about Landon in association with Kai Kamara. You want to jump over that one and bring in Wanda Watch once again?
No, but I am curious. Like, I think Kai can play for years. Like, I don't see him.
There's been no physical drop off with him.
Like, he is 38 years old. He will turn 39 on September 1st. Mm-hmm. He is currently 29 goals away from passing Wanda.
29? Okay. Yeah. But he scored 9 last year from Minnesota. Lost track. It's hard with.
It's tough.
Yeah. Montreal, I think he had 9 last year, 4 already. So, okay. I mean, I think if he gets like 10 a year, so it's like basically 10 a year if he plays a couple more years, that's 29 from Wando. I think it's possible. I think people weren't thinking that. Obviously, he went to Finland, came back, and last year was like, wow, that was amazing. Now, again, he finds himself in a good spot, at least, you know, service. But what he does is, you know, in the box, that's where his damage is. And his movement, his understanding, his finishing.
He's only getting better.
Yeah.
So I could see this continuing. And I'm now thinking, like, him and Wando as like 2 D2, you know.
How much credit do you take if it's him and Wando 1 and 2?
Honestly, I'll just be so disappointed. I mean, just in myself.
Where I'm like, I mean, you got to think Will Bruin sitting there being like, it's me next. I got to be third on this list.
No, what Kai is doing is incredible, honestly. I mean, I wish the Fire could make it count more, which is a whole other story. But I mean, the ability that he has to be able to find these chances and just like the goals that he's scoring still consistently. I could see him doing this into his 40s, kind of like a Preki.
It wouldn't be shocking if he scored 12 goals this year, right?
No.
8 more, which would put him at 21 away from passing Wando.
And then you're saying, okay, he's going to play 2 more years. Like, oh yeah, he could do that.
He has said he wants to play till 40.
Yes, he said he wants to take penalty kicks. He's got to take all the penalty kicks for whatever team he plays for.
Which in theory would only be one more full season after this if 40's his hard line, because he would be 40 next September. You know, 39 or 40. I know ETR, we have a lot of trouble with ages. You have to think if it's single digits after next season, he's coming. He's at least coming off the bench for someone.
Yeah. Late. Come in late.
Set pieces.
Yeah.
There's like no way, unless he really can't play, which doesn't seem to be coming that soon.
No. I just don't think it's as far off as people think. I think people have written it off as saying, okay, well, he's going to pass Landon. That would be a nice moment. But I don't know. There's a part of it. When I watch him play, I'm like, I think he just loves playing.
Yeah.
Which I think at this age is like the most important thing, is that you have to continue. Cause it's not just the game day, right? Like, you got to do all the rest of it, which he still does, but he just loves doing it. It's amazing.
He was already in the league when Brian Gutierrez was born, I think. That's sort of, and Chris Brady, that's his experience. And I remember when Wando passed Landon, we looked down the list and we were like, nah.
Nobody.
No one's coming.
If Joseph stays healthy, then yeah, that was it.
There was like, Will Bruin chokes at the time as well, because he had scored a ton of goals and was still in the league.
The other thing too is Kai left MLS.
Twice.
Yeah. So there's been passages where it's not like he's just spent his whole career here. I mean, most of it, but still.
He has scored goals in other leagues in his prime years.
Yeah.
And still is doing this in MLS, which
is wild.
He
wasted a couple in Finland, or teams wasted some not having him here. So
it's wild to say. I remember just sitting on this show and saying, oh yeah, Wando did it, so that's it. Like, we're not going to talk about this, because anyone who scores this many will probably leave Major League Soccer. That's become a path now. And then maybe they'd come back. But
you think Wando comes out of retirement if Kai gets close?
Feel like there's a chance Bradley Wright Phillips is like, I got to get back in this conversation.
Absolutely.
Jeff Cunningham could probably put a few in still. Razov looks fit.
Yeah. I played with Kai when we were 18, or I was 19.
Don't mess around with Ante in the weight room.
No.
And he was like 18, 17, but he looks the same. He looks the same.
Well, he could make history this weekend. 2 goals, not outside the realm of possibility. That would tie Landon Donovan at 145 for second all time in MLS history. So good luck to Kai Kamara. And of course, we'll keep talking about this as it goes along. If it doesn't happen this week, let's move on to our favorite segment of the week. Where in the world is Kalen Carr? I think that's how Andrew normally does it. Some cheesy stuff and then a few, you know, names and jokes that no one gets. Kalen, where are you this weekend?
We be catching.
Gosh.
Yeah, tough.
He hadn't gotten any yet, so I figured he was feeling it.
I'm off this weekend. Yeah.
Wow. Whoa. DNPCD?
I think New England's on the road. Or, I think they're hitting the road this week. So.
Bar Louie's going to go broke.
I know. Yeah. You know how many people called me out on that when I was up in New England? They're like, dude, text me. I can get you in. I know a guy. Like, I can help. It's embarrassing.
Tell Chris Tierney to do more work. Come on. He has to help you out.
No, it wasn't Chris. But yeah, I'm not going to name names.
So you're nowhere. So that means for your match that you want us to preview, you have the choice of any game.
Okay.
Congratulations.
I'm going to stick with Cincinnati.
Okay.
And, you know, I think still top of the table in the East, or what, I guess.
Tied for first with New England.
Yeah. And then DC has been really good as of late.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the Benteke show, I think it's a tricky one for Cincinnati. I think they do match up pretty well with that 3-5-2. And I just think the physicality, that direct play from DC that's caused a lot of problems. I think Cincinnati set up pretty darn well for that. I mean, think of Miazga, Haglund, and Mosquera.
Like
those three, I almost couldn't pick a better three if you want to bang with Benteke. So I think that physicality piece of it for Cincinnati will be good. I mean, they were pretty poor in possession. Both teams were, honestly, New England and Cincinnati, just like as far as the possession and soccer part of it. I mean, it was entertaining as well.
Kalen texted me and said it felt like a rainy, sloppy playoff game.
Yeah, where it's not about always like keeping the ball and the ideas and the ways to exploit different teams. It was like, you know, try not to make a mistake. Set pieces. That's how Cincinnati scored. Mascara got the goal. Injuries. You know, it was a lot. And then honestly, some really good goalkeeping play. Petrovic makes saves on Acosta. But I think Cincinnati at home will hope to have much more of the ball, try to control more of the tempo of the game, which
we need
kind of struggled
with a little bit. We need to start seeing that from them.
Yeah, they've struggled with that this year. It's been something that they've like tried to. I think they've tried to do it, but they've been better in moments where they just win the ball with Wilbedo and get the ball in transition, find it to Acosta, and now with Sergio Santos as well, like having that extra little bit of pace. So they've been better that way, but I don't think that's going to be very useful against this DC team because they're not going to really try to play through that middle press, right? They're going to just go long to Benteke and then second balls and all that becomes a big part of it. But I think this one is set up to be a good game.
DC has struggled on the road, but they did beat Orlando in their last road game. For Cincinnati, we talked with K2 on Monday and Matt Doyle about Brenner.
Mm-hmm.
The move has gone through officially. You are around the team calling the game this weekend. What's your feel on, does he play again for them? Should he? Like, what's your take on the whole situation?
Well, I spoke to Pat Noonan about it, and you know, he was set to return on Thursday night from making a signing. And then I think Friday he was at training. So I was not sure whether he was going to come to the game, be available off the bench or not, which was kind of the case when I did their match on match day one.
When he had come from Nottingham Forest.
Well, he was not at Nottingham. He went to Brazil.
It
was around the...
Sorry, I forgot.
But I mean, it's hard to keep track. There's been different moves that have come through and failed. And I mean, Noonan said they expect to get him playing. They expect him to score goals. They expect him to be a part of it, and that they'd be crazy to try and like push him to the side or throw him away. Of course, they want to use him for as many goals as possible until he makes the sale. And, you know, for me, I think the hope would be that Brenner would now have like the peace of mind to say, all right, I got my move.
Interesting.
Like I have that now set. There's no questions, which was, you know, I think the part before of like, are they going to sell me? Are they not going to sell me? And I've played with guys in my career where that can become a, you know, big issue, right? Because you want to say, but honestly, the MLS I played in was much more of like blocking players from making moves. You know, it was really more about just like, stay here as long as you can. We're going to keep you all the way through. And now it's like Cincinnati has proven they're not going to stand in the way. And I think it's tricky because now they have to manage a few different situations. One, I also think they have other players of interest, like Brandon Vasquez, of course, we know. Now he might be thinking, okay, well, when's my turn? When do I get to make the move? But on the positive side, you're also saying, okay, well, the club hasn't stood in the way of when a player comes, we'll find the right time. But this is where it goes back to what I was saying before about how difficult it is to turn over a roster. They're having to do it mid-season, right? So the scouting department, I'm sure, will have known for the Brenner situation at least for a long time. But you'd hope that he would be still available and able to like push now, even for the sake of trying to impress his next move or go to Nesse in a better place. But I think it's less on, it's really on Brenner. It's really on him of like, what is he going to give to this team? What is he going to do? I would hope that he has the peace of mind now to say, I'm going to get my move. I'm going to give everything. But it is, I don't know. It sounds like he's a little bit of like, I don't know. It's just unreliable, I would say, as far as what's his level of, you know, engagement. Is he really in on this, or is he just going to be looking down the road and being like, oh, I've got my move now, actually I'm going to just like coast and wait?
It's going to be an interesting one. As you said, Vasquez, Barrial, we heard about Lucho Acosta contract stuff. So FC Cincinnati, it was like Herculean effort last year to reset up the roster and be successful.
Yeah,
they were good for 6 months, and now they have to flip the roster, as Kalen said, and do it all over again. Matt Doyle, what match are you focused on this weekend?
Toronto versus New England. And I did not realize that Bob Bradley and Bruce Arena, who are the two elder statesmen of MLS coaches, of American soccer coaches in general overall, had met so few times over the years. Their teams have not played each other all that often. And so we're getting a treat in this one, especially because the Revs have been so good. Now, granted, without Barrero, expecting the ceiling to come down a little bit, but it does make it interesting because I think we will see Gustavo Bo and Vrioni starting up top together in that narrow diamond. We'll see Noel Buck, and Latif Blessing is back now with his family. Congratulations to Latif on that. It's some really cool stuff put out by the Revs on social, you know, welcoming them back to America. So the Revs are good even without this crucial piece, and they play really attacking, attractive soccer. And on the other side is a Toronto team that has taken some time to sort of find themselves. And as recently as like 6 days ago, it felt like their backs were against the wall a little bit. But I thought CJ Sapong made a really big difference in terms of how they could play, not just in terms of scoring the goal, but if you look up the build up to that goal, like they're able to turn that possession that they have in central midfield and that skill that they have on the wings, they were finally able to turn it into multiple runners making good and sort of varied runs at the same time into the box. And like, that's literally how Sapong scores the goal, right? Bernardeschi's at the near post and Sapong ends up all alone, unmarked, did the six for a tap in, and it looked like a Bob Bradley team's goal. And we haven't seen much of that from Toronto this year. So, and they also, at the same time, they're getting some answers in terms of depth in central midfield from Brendan Cervania and the academy kid they just signed, whose name I'm forgetting.
Coelho? Yeah.
I think he's a Brazilian or Portuguese. Spanish. He's Spanish. Okay.
But we could throw a fourth or fifth country in there.
Sure. And see if it's something, you know, Andorran.
Sure. Narrow Island?
Yeah.
We'll just call it all Scandinavia.
Okay. Anyway, Toronto have been, I don't want to say have been, they looked better last week. And for most of the season, they have been like really what you would expect from a veteran team in terms of not using the ball stupidly.
Yeah.
Like they've had two games where they've kind of shot themselves in the foot, and that has kind of like skewed the underlying numbers a bit. If you look at the rest of it, they're like, they just don't turn the ball over in bad spots, so they don't get countered, and they have Sean Johnson in goal, so they don't give up cheap goals. And it's like, okay, that's the foundation. We want more from them. We've all seen, you know, we've all seen Bob Bradley teams play some of the best soccer this league. I texted the group chat last night. I was like, you know, 2023 LAFC are unquestionably better than what we saw in 2019 and 2020 from this team. But the 2019 and 2020 teams were so much more fun in terms of how they played than the 2022-23 LAFC team. Like, that is what I think Toronto's aiming for. And it felt like, okay, the first part of this is making sure that we could use the ball without shooting ourselves in the foot. The second part now is use the ball to create chances. And they took a step forward on that next week. So I'm looking forward to this one. And I think there's some like ancillary content about the Bob Bruce rivalry and their history together. I think that's coming out on MLSsoccer.com.
Yeah, there'll be a special piece. Bob Bradley was an assistant for Bruce at UVA and
started as an intern, I believe, under Bruce. Yeah.
So 1983, they both, Bruce as the head man, Bob as the assistant, coached the USU 23s in 1996. Bob was Bruce's assistant with DC United for 2 years to start Major League Soccer, of course, in which they won 2 championships. And then Bob took over his own team from there on out, and they have proceeded to be national team managers, MLS Cup winners, Open Cup winners, Shield winners. It is amazing, both their history together, what they have meant to the sport, and the fact that they are both still not just relevant, but like dominant at times. Think about the last 5 years and think about the fact that 1996 was Bruce Arena's first MLS Cup victory and Bob Bradley was a part of that. Like, we're in the realm of Bob coached, I believe, Jesse Marsh in Princeton, then had them draft him to DC United. Jesse Marsh has now won trophies as a coach. Like, we're on that next generation. They are the godfathers, I think, for many people of soccer in this country. They've done some great stuff. So that's going to be really fun to watch them go out there and face off. As you said, there's going to be a ton of coverage around it. We don't know how many more times we're going to get this. New Jersey versus Long Island. You know what I mean? It's kind of what the whole country is waiting for, especially Canada. I think a lot of people in Toronto feel really strongly about the New Jersey versus Long Island rivalry. Shout out to Matt Hedges, by the way, as well, coming back from injury. My game is Inter Miami against Atlanta United. There's rivalry stuff. I don't care. Fabrizio Romano putting out a tweet earlier today. He says, quote, Messi will leave Paris Saint-Germain at the end of the season. There are no doubts about that anymore. Behind the scenes, it's now understood that Leo's father, Jorge, communicated the decision to PSG already 1 month ago due to the project. It was the final breaking point. We have had this conversation for a while.
We have to give credit to Mike Ryan, the producer for the Levitard show down in Miami, because he said Bob was wrong from the jump. Fabrizio Romano said months ago, oh, it's everything but the name on the piece of paper. Leo Messi is going to be back in Paris next year.
So he will not be. So credit to Mike Ryan. Good luck in game 3 down in Miami. But don't tell him I said that. You know what I mean? It's just a podcast. He can't hear. So Messi, we thought it was PSG, Barca, Inter Miami, and maybe
Saudi Arabia,
a team in Saudi Arabia. Messi is currently suspended for 2 weeks from PSG because he traveled to Saudi Arabia when he was not supposed to for promotional purposes. So it would seem that the Saudi Arabian club offer is legitimate because he's being suspended because he was in Saudi Arabia. And that feels like a pretty strong connection to me. Barcelona, this report came out from goal.com saying that Barca has not put together a concrete offer because of their financial constraints. They're not sure they're going to be able to. Joe Pompilino, I butchered that and that's fine. He will never know. Says Leo Messi's in talks with a Saudi Arabian club on a contract worth $400 million annually. According to a paper in England, that would be the most lucrative deal in the history of sports. It would be $200 million more than Cristiano Ronaldo's.
And Cristiano Ronaldo, by the way, miserable there, according to all reports, and like his behavior.
Yeah. So all of this is out there.
Yeah.
And all of this is going on. It's why we have said over and over at the start of the season, we get it with Miami. They're leaving spots open. They have to build for this moment, for the potential. He is one of the three greatest players in the history of the game.
He's the greatest player in the history of the game.
The Bryce Duke
deal. They had to move Bryce Duke. I have a feeling they're going to start sort of hedging on the Kramaski thing, because if Benjamin Kramaski's playing so well...
Oh, Messi doesn't want to come and have to fight for his
Yeah, exactly.
Playing time.
And like, how is he going to fit in the team?
Right.
Because I don't know. Maybe, I guess Kramaski...
Maybe they could buy him out. Yeah.
He's so good. He could probably adjust his game to play with Messi, but I don't know that Messi can figure out how to play with him. This is the story, though, and this is another domino, if it's true, which I feel very strongly about the no one actually knows what's going on thing. Messi and his family are trying to make a decision. Do you have breaking news?
Domino.
That's a good one. That was good. Kalen, were you there for that? No.
No, I have no idea what's happening.
Oh man!
Can I just make a point?
I think this is the second time you guys have done this. This happened last week on the show.
Yeah, it happened too. I don't even know when it happened anymore.
Yeah, nah. Geez, Kalen. All right, don't watch the show. Okay, but the point I want to make in all of this is that I am filing a discovery claim on Lionel Messi for my Golden Boot draft team. Anders, I said it first, therefore it is law. Please confirm. That's the rule.
What place is Doyle in the standings right now? So he doesn't have first rights. Who has first rights? Sorry, he was third, is what Anders.
Well, he's not here.
This is a conference call situation. If you are not on the conference call, you do lose first rights. We are doing this right now. Official MLS distribution Golden Boot draft. Who has discovery rights to Messi? We go to Andrew Reby first. No response. Going once, going twice, none. Okay, it moves to Doyle.
I will file a discovery claim on Lionel.
He's going to have... We did tell Weeby when we were recording.
We did.
He wasn't there. He's going to have 17 assists and 0 goals.
It's going to be amazing. He's just going to be in pure Valderrama phase. Yeah. He's not going to leave the center circle. Yeah. He's going to have like every secondary assist.
Who has Campagna? Does someone have Campagna?
Somebody does. Doesn't...
I do think Weeby has Campagna.
That bums me out.
Yeah. Maybe Joseph will be the one, but Weeby probably has Joseph.
I have Joseph.
This is exciting, though. So another domino down. If we believe that it was already between four different parties, if you take PSG out, that makes it three, which increases the likelihood and the chances just based on pure numbers that Lionel Messi will play Major League Soccer this year, and he will do so.
I feel like it's going to happen.
It feels like it's between that or him going to Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
Feels like Barcelona's off, except that Xavi's the manager and wants him to come.
$400 million annually does sound compelling.
But also $200 million annually sounds good.
It does. I mean, yeah.
I would take either. I'd take half that.
Yeah.
You're so modest.
It is wild. A little weird to me that, I mean, not weird. I don't know. This is not a problem I face.
$400 million is the GDP of a nation.
Yeah.
It's absurd. It's mind blowing. But also, I don't think money's a problem for Messi.
No.
And I don't think coming to the U.S. would be that hard on him in terms of other sponsorship money. We've heard reports that the Argentine FA is going to open up a full-time camp in Miami, as well as others across the country. I think Messi has a hamburger deal with Hard Rock. Like, he's all over the place.
Yeah.
He's got his finger in a lot of different ways. And we saw what happened for Beckham. Like, it was more than just being a player. He now owns a team in a league because he came to the LA Galaxy. And Messi, of course, is even bigger than that. So we mentioned our Golden Boot teams a couple times. We have to dig into that a little bit more here. We want to remind everyone to check out the new free-to-play games at MLSsoccer.com/gaming. One of these is the MLS Squad Pick game. You pick five players you think will all score in the same match day. If all five do score, you win. There are smaller prizes you can win every week. If you play, even if you don't win, you are automatically entered into a random drawing for the end of the year for a grand prize of $10,000. You could live like Messi. So we are all going to select a person off our Golden Boot teams that we think will score this weekend, and we're going to help Weeby by selecting one off his. Anders, I don't know anyone's Golden Boot teams, so I don't really know how we're going to do this. So for Andrew Weeby, we have a lot of injuries on his team.
We do. Kyoto, Yakumakis.
Yeah.
He does have Campana.
Yeah.
And they're hosting Atlanta United. Aura and Insigne. I think we should pick Insigne for Andrew.
Okay. So Andrew gets Insigne. Kalen, do you know your own team?
I'm texting Tom right now just to double check exactly who we have. I feel... I'm going to go with Bawanga.
Okay.
Bawanga at Levi's.
93rd minute.
Yeah.
Off the bench. Cool.
Yeah.
Do you have a pick of your own team?
I'll say watch that game at Levi's Stadium, man. Jeremy Bobosi.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with Jordan Morris back on the scoring sheet. I think SKC is a decent matchup for him to do that. And with that,
yeah,
talk a little SKC.
It's a very good pick. Yeah.
And I didn't even plan it. Seattle are hosting SKC on Sunday. That's our standalone game, 4:30 p.m. Eastern time. Sporting Kansas City with a loss in this one would tie the record for the longest winless streak to start an MLS season. They would tie 2007-27. How did we used to do dates?
2007.
2007 RSL. I can tell you, it was June 17th, 2007. RSL lost 3-2 to the LA Galaxy to clinch that record. It was a loaded squad. LA Galaxy had Kobe Jones score in that game. Nate Jaquia.
And Ezin Buttle.
A legend himself. World Cup veteran.
Pete Vahanis
was on that squad.
Yep.
I believe Robbie Finley played for the Galaxy. Chris Klein was on RSL, and then they got traded for each other later that season.
Those RSL teams, those first 2 years,
they weren't good.
They weren't good, but they were really fun.
Yeah.
They were really like...
Andy Williams.
Yeah, Andy Williams. I'm trying to...
Eddie Pope. Eddie Pope and Nick Raimondo back there trying to put out every fire in the world.
Jason Kreis up top.
I think... Was Jamie Watson on one of those?
Jamie Watson was on the team. Freddie Adu joined the team in 2007.
Yeah.
Yeah. Medi Bellucci. Freddie.
The American 10 we always knew we needed.
I mean, yeah. I mean, those teams were fun. I think they played fun soccer.
Yeah. But they lost a lot.
They did lose a lot.
Including 11 in a row to start the year. SKC could be the same. Kalen, we haven't really gotten your thoughts as much.
Less fun.
You have a history with SKC? You enjoying what you've been seeing?
No, it's been depressing. Yeah. And I think even just with the...
No, it's just too sad.
It's just too sad, yeah. Even... To me, this last weekend, because I was obviously on another match, but at halftime, I had to double check to be like,
Are they losing? Is
this really happening? Because I assumed, okay, things have been bad, but you know, every week I'm kind of like, it's going to turn around at some point, or they're going to get a result. And this one seemed to be the one that lined up the best because Montreal hasn't been in good form coming down there, and man, it was just depressing. Yeah. The way, and you know, even when you talk to when I saw the comments coming out from Johnny Russell, it was just like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what to do at this point. And he talked about the confidence of the team being low, dropping down. I was saying like, Gadi Kinda, you were just kept saying like, once these guys get healthy, you're going to be okay. It's a lot to put on Kinda because he's just come back from a year gone.
He's not even that player.
He's not that guy.
He's a connector.
Yeah.
He's quality, but he's not a difference maker.
Yeah. He's not like a Ladero where like, okay, our guy's back. We're going to run the whole game through him.
Carlos Heel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not that.
No, but he gives them something a little different or unexpected at times. Like, I don't know. It's just been really predictable. And the scary part now is that they used to say, okay, well, what's the next chance? And then it's like, oh, you're going to Seattle.
Yeah.
Like you almost couldn't have a worse matchup. And then you think about just what Seattle did to them in Kansas City. Now they're getting Funtas back from red card suspension. By the way, he got a red card because he couldn't defend in space against Frioni one-on-one. Right? Like that's how he got the red card for Dogso. And now it's welcome back.
Jordan Morris.
Here's Jordan Morris here. Yeah. Right. And so it's like, I think I'd be interested to see what Schmetzer does in this one. I think one, he'll have to say to this team, be careful because these are the types of games that can be a trip game for you if you're saying, oh, this team is at the very bottom. So how they start the game will be important because you want to just, you know, step on a team right away, give them no hope because they're basically, you know, the confidence on this team is already shattered, and if they go down in Seattle early, it's going to be a mountain to climb. So how they start the game, but I'll be interested to see if they move Jordan Morris back to the nine. You've got Eber back. Rui Diaz still hurt, but Eber, you could say, with that matchup against those two center backs, even if Jordan Morris plays wide, he can get behind. Bryce Duke scored getting him behind last week. So it's like he can hurt them from whatever position, but I'd be interested to see if he goes with maybe bringing Rusnak to that right wing-ish spot, and then you have Chu on the left and Morris up top, and just saying, okay, we've seen what this looks like before. Why not have another go at it?
Brian Schmetzer saying this week, Christian Roldan is going to go see a specialist. It's concussion issues. He says they don't believe it's career threatening, but all of that's scary. So best from us goes out to Christian Roldan, one of the best people in MLS. And obviously we're big fans of him. We hope to see him back on the field soon. For KC, they go to Houston on Wednesday in Open Cup. They are on the verge of the longest winless streak to start an MLS season. Open Cup sounds like a big deal for them. So it'll be interesting to see how they handle that as well. Where does Peter Vermees sort of put his focus? Doyle, are there any other larger thoughts about SKC you'd like to express right now?
So a lot of people, a lot of fans are asking in mostly on Twitter or other social media, like, what do we do to get out of this for this year? And like, what is next? And I don't think Peter Vermees being fired is in the cards. And I know this is like a almost historically awful start to the season. I don't think it should be in the cards. I think that he's earned over the past 15 years a certain amount of trust and a certain amount of leash to try to put things right. And he has gotten the say there. So he's the one who's gotten it wrong, but I think he's earned the amount of trust. I do expect at some point you have to reevaluate the rest of the front office, make sure your scouting staff has different points of view in there. They used to have a very good analytics department, which is really just one guy, Ri Shu, shout out to Ri. They've never replaced him when he left. They need to make that investment as well. And then the number one thing that they have to get right going forward is Peter Vermees has to start being able to develop players to their full potential again. That was what defined Sporting Kansas City from 2009 to 2015 or so. And it was not just guys that they got out of the draft, and the draft was the primary acquisition device for young players at that point. But they were also able to pick up, you know, they got Benny Failhaber for free, and he played the best soccer of his life playing for Sporting Kansas City. They haven't been that in more than half a decade now.
That's where Kai found his feet.
Kai Ikapara.
Yeah.
You know, he like the Quakes gave up on him and he came to Sporting Kansas City. And once he got healthy, he, I think, arguably put together the best 3-year stretch of any center back that we've seen in MLS history. Granted, the third year was in Minnesota, but like he was really, really good. They haven't been that team. So they do need personnel. They do need to rethink the front office structure and make sure that other voices are getting heard. They do need to add a data analytics department in order to make sure that you're doing all the possible due diligence on the money you're spending, because we know that Sporting Kansas City is not going to spend like Miami, Atlanta, Toronto, Galaxy, LAFC. They just don't. And that's totally fine. But like, you have to have in place to make sure that you don't miss when you're spending a lot. And then it comes on to Peter Vermees, where it's like, okay, I don't think the game model's wrong, but your players are not getting better. That's it. That's my take on Sporting Kansas City. And I know this year is going to end up being frustrating, probably going to end up with a wooden spoon. But you're at the end of it, you're probably going to have 3 open DP slots and 3 open U22 initiative slots, and make sure that the processes are in place to get those signings correct.
American soccer analyst who a website that all of us are big fans of, they just put out
Let's say it right.
Analysis.
Yes. AmericanSoccerAnalysis.com. Dave's a big fan.
They just put out their tiers of MLS clubs and their analytics yesterday. And it's top is 1, 2, and 3, and SKC's in that third tier. And that's sort of talking to people in the analytics community about what they see in that, in their clubs, in other clubs as well. So that,
and it's not a big event. Like you could get a good data analyst for $70,000.
Whoa, come on. We're in favor of let's say a higher number. So everyone has to pay
210.
Number. Yeah. Yeah. let's start at $200 million. And we'll move from there as we have to. Let's finish up with our mailbag. We started out the last show. We were talking about Nashville, Atlanta on Monday. And I said we didn't have a good fabricated name for this rivalry. And I really felt like Andrew Wiebe being out needed something like that, right? A fake rivalry to talk about. We haven't talked about shrines in a while. We haven't talked about fake nicknames or the father or anything like that. So this is for him. We hope you feel better. We're excited to see you back. I got some incredible responses online to this. This is for Nashville, Atlanta. That is geographically the closest rivalry for Nashville and Atlanta, although I believe Charlotte is pretty close as well for Atlanta fans, and that one has a name already, is my understanding.
What's the name of that one? Huh? What's the name of that one?
I don't know, but it was said in here in the chat or throughout. Oh, goodness. Like, oh, well, we already call that one this. Not what we're talking about right now, so not relevant.
I'm looking it up, David.
One we got from Jay Mueller on Twitter says Southern Hostility instead of Southern Hospitality. He said, I think that's the favorite one I've heard. James Lambert, shout out to James Lambert again, DC legend. He went with Chicken Fried Derby, or Derby, however you want to call it.
Hold on, let's take. It, apparently, it's the Royal Rumble.
Yes,
that's actually really good.
Because the Queen.
The Queen City and the Kings of the South.
Yeah.
That's actually very good.
Yeah, it's not bad.
There, nice. Andy McDowlany on Twitter wants to call it the Y'all Brawl. Because people in the South get it. They say y'all. Mm. You don't like that one? What about the Biscuits and Gravy Co. or El Gravy Co.?
Eh. I don't love that.
Okay. Hot and Nat. Ryan B. on Twitter, the Hot and Nasty with the letter M.
I don't why nasty.
Like, I have no idea.
Is that a Nashville thing?
Maybe.
I when I read that first, I thought it was hot and dirty.
Yeah.
Because Dirty South.
Yeah.
And hot chicken. So I thought that one. I love Nashville. Not Nashville.
Joe actually wore this shirt because it's hot chicken spiced colors, and he's sweating. Smells of it. He's delicious. Sweating out just. Cajun, not Cajun spices. What is in that?
I don't know what.
You don't even know what
it is. It's just delicious.
Apparently, there's already been a belt made for the Southern Champions. There is a picture that I have on my computer of Hani Mukhtar holding up. It's like a wrestler belt right there.
Okay,
Southern Champion. So that's a thing that's already out there. But I think my two favorites are this. We have a few different people who sent me a message. Some did it with a voice memo in it, which I appreciate. And they want it to be named after a border dispute between the state of Tennessee and the state of Georgia over where the border should lie.
This is the most weeby segment you're ever going to do in your life.
Up and down the Tennessee River.
Obscure geographical facts.
It is a historic geographical conversation. Apparently, it is a widely heated one. And therefore, they would call it the River Derby in some way, which they want to be called El Ribereño. The river.
Do less.
Okay. The other one from Clay LaSoul, Clay Lincoln, shout out to him and a few other people, is Jack and Coke. Coca-Cola, of course.
Coca-Cola's from Atlanta, and Jack Daniels
is from Tennessee.
I like that one.
I left that one for last.
That
I was hoping
really
I'd get you
good.
Guys to buy on a different one before I said that one.
That one's really good.
Doyle's is ecstatic.
Yeah, it's a terrible drink, but that's a good name for a rivalry.
All right.
Which may or may not exist.
So on that note, we are so excited to have back whoever comes back next week. I don't know if Wiebe will be back. K2 will be back. Mm-hmm. C2 will be back.
What did we think of the vibes with the show this week with no Andrew? I actually thought it flowed really well. Right?
Yeah, I'm miss Wiebe. I'm going to be honest. I love this group, but I miss Wiebe. I feel bad. He's getting a rough stick here.
It is the only thing that has made him happy this week is that he gets mentioned and made fun of on the show. You know that's what he's living on.
Would it ruin the locker room chemistry if we transfer listed him ahead of the window?
I just for me, what's tough is if he signs, let's say, with a Total Soccer show,
mm-hmm. right? Or just goes full time with the wrap up.
Yeah, if he just goes Apple TV,
because those suits,
yeah.
that Weeby's wearing, like Mindy must have been doing the shop.
Yeah, probably
because there's no way he could pick.
But if he does that, I don't know that I could share a field with him when he has to pop in.
Mm-hmm.
So the question becomes like, is he gone? Right?
Because now you're like, you're the Ladero, you're the centerpiece, and you're like,
I'm just saying, I've scored goals. I'm the one who's going to be here through MLS Cup. Don't you guys want me to be in form over him popping in for a couple goals before he heads over to Italy or Apple TV?
I think you make a good point.
Thanks, Kayla. Appreciate that. And with that, we are done here on Extra Time. Thank you all for listening. Thank you for watching. For those of you watching, of course, every match this weekend on MLS season
pass. Congrats to LAFC.
On Apple TV.
LAFC.
Congrats
Amazing
once again
win.
To LAFC. Into the CCL final. And we'll find out who they will meet coming up. And I will see all of you in either León or Monterrey for the first or second leg of that, because can't give away a free trip there. So I got to go.
Your passport all up to date?
Yeah, I'm ready to rock. I'm ready to go. Right. CCL finals, that's my thing. And we will see you all next time.